When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome back to Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. I am your host, Movie Mike, joined this week by my wife and co-host, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm great.
Ready to get into the Oscar nominations?
Let's do it.
We'll do that. I'll give you my review of a Best Picture nominee, The Banshees of Inisherin, and in the trailer park, I'll talk about why my expectations have changed for Scream 6 after Scream 5 kind of let me down. So shout out to the Monday Morning Movie crew, and now, let's talk movies.
In a world where everyone and their mother has a podcast, one man stands to infiltrate the ears of listeners like never before in a movie podcast. A man with so much movie knowledge, he's basically like a walking IMDb with glasses. From the Nashville Podcast Network, this is Movie Mike's Movie Podcast.
Nominations came out last week. It is the 95th Oscars. I gotta say, looking at this list, I'm a little underwhelmed.
I would agree.
And how would you describe Oscar season for me?
The Super Bowl of movies.
I love it. I love watching all of the Best Picture nominees. It is the only award show I will watch all 3 hours of. I try to defend it. I don't know why I do. There's no real reason for me to be behind the Oscars, but I just feel like there's a little bit of historical value, and it kind of provides a snapshot into all the important things happening in movies for that year.
And so, sometimes it becomes a relic of pop culture. We had the infamous Ellen DeGeneres selfie with all the celebrities. We had the slap last year.
There's always something at the Oscars.
Always something. The Moonlight, La La Land.
I was rewatching fiasco. That last week.
I know. We watched that on TikTok last week, and it still makes me cringe to this day.
So there's just always something magical to me about the Oscars, aside from the movies that get nominated. And even now in today's world where we have more access to all these actors, it used to be that you would watch the Oscars because this would be the only time you would see these actors outside of their movies. I mean, we see them on social media all the time now, but I still think there's something special to having them all together in one room. Even watching the Golden Globes, it was kind of cool to see them all interact. So
I like the fashion.
Oh, you like that part of it?
I love the fashion.
I'm getting more into the guy fashion. I follow a lot of GQ accounts, so I get into a little bit of the red carpet because I like to see like people like Seth Rogen make those lists.
Love the GQ follow.
I do.
I'll be driving and I'll look over and I'm like, what are you looking at? Like, GQ's Instagram?
Yeah. Okay. All right, but let's get into the list. Let's start it off with Best Picture. Who was nominated for Best Picture? And we'll go through all the major categories. I'll tell you who I think is going to win. And on some of these, I'll tell you who I think should win because sometimes it's different for me. So let's start with Best Picture.
Best Picture, we have All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking.
The thing that sticks out to me about this category is there are a couple sequels in there. Top Gun Maverick, Avatar, The Way of Water. Only two sequels ever have gone on to win Best Picture. That is Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, and The Godfather Part II. And the whole reason that the Best Picture category exists and why sequels rarely get nominated is because these movies are supposed to be novel. They're supposed to take either a concept, take a historical figure, and present it in a way that hasn't been done before.
This is the worst year of Best Picture nominations, in my opinion.
And it is the worst year.
Avatar? Really? Just because it took a lot of money to make and it made a lot of money.
And James Cameron.
Does not mean it should be nominated for Best Picture.
And what I said last year doing this episode is I believe that they should have like an automatic slot for whatever movie grossed the highest amount the previous year to automatically get nominated for Best Picture. That kind of happened this year on its own with Avatar now crossing the $2 billion mark. So having that movie there and having Top Gun Maverick, I feel gives that movies for people to root for who don't normally care about Best Picture. And this is the battle I get into every year is I watch all these movies because I, you know, do this podcast. I would watch it even if I didn't have this podcast. But sometimes it's hard to get people interested because it's all movies they've never seen. But now there are actual movies that have also the box office numbers. So I feel it's a little bit different this year. But also, I don't think Avatar should be up there. I don't think Elvis is Best Picture worthy.
I'm going to say it. Elvis was good. I don't know. It didn't live up to the hype for me. Like, I remember we talked about it and I was like, it was good. Austin Butler did a great job. But we're what? It came out in June. We're like 7 months out. A, I'm sick of his Elvis accent. I get he did method acting. If I have to hear him talk on an award show, it irritates me to my core. But also, like, I don't know, wasn't the greatest biopic ever made.
It was different. I also think a lot of Best Picture and the Oscars altogether is politics, and you have
Avatar's on there.
So you have just people already built into this. So I don't think Elvis will win. I don't think Top Gun Maverick will win. I kind of feel like it kind of snuck in there. I like Triangle of Sadness, but I don't feel like that movie was big enough.
I couldn't watch it.
Yeah, there's a lot of puking in that movie.
I can't handle that.
And then Banshees of Inisherin, I feel like that is one that the people voting on the Oscars would lean towards.
The Academy loves that. It was good. You liked it more than me.
Yeah.
But I watched it, but it is very much like a caters to the Academy.
And then you have The Fabelmans, which it's hard to bet against.
I loved The Fabelmans.
Steven Spielberg. I really liked it too. I feel like that's almost runner up in this scenario, and I wouldn't be surprised if it did win.
I don't see it winning though.
Yeah, I can't visualize that in my head. So I'm going with the winner here, Everything Everywhere All at Once. It had the most nominations out of any movie. It is the most novel out of any movie on this list, and I think it deserves to win. I think it needs to be the movie that represents 2022. So I'm going with Everything Everywhere All at Once. A snub here. Some people said Nope. I really enjoyed Nope. I probably overhyped Nope on this podcast, but I don't think it is a snub here. I don't think it was Best Picture worthy, even though I really enjoyed it. Wakanda Forever. I don't think it had as much of a cultural impact as the first Black Panther, but if you're going to put Elvis up there, if you're going to put Top Gun Maverick,
if you're going to put Avatar up there.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Black Panther, Wakanda Forever didn't get up there. So, all right, let's move on now to Best Actor in a Leading Role. Another weak category.
I have a snub though. The Whale.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. I got so let's backtrack here. I said when I reviewed The Whale that I would riot if it didn't win Best Picture.
I'm looking at your notes.
It didn't even get nominated.
Oh my god. For everyone listening, he moved his microphone away for you, but that was right in my ear.
It did not even get nominated. And I was saying a lot of the Oscars are politics. And that is probably why it did not get nominated. The Whale probably didn't play the game that all these other movies did. It is an outrage to me that The Whale is not nominated.
Which this leads into, we will talk about it in a second. Brendan Fraser got nominated,
yeah,
but The Whale.
I was going to get to that, but I forgot about the biggest snub of all time. When these were revealed, my jaw literally dropped. I'm still getting choked up about it because that movie, even more so than Everything Everywhere All at Once, resonated with me so much. And it was so well done. There was so much great acting in that movie. I can't believe it didn't get nominated.
I just referenced your notes. I would like to point out, I woke up this morning.
Yeah.
And at like 7 a.m. you had emailed
me. I get fired up about the Oscars.
Prep for this episode. And I woke up and I was like, I feel like my boss is like sending me a task. And you were like, okay, this is what we're going through tonight. Just review this when you have a chance. And I was like, what is this my job now?
Yeah, but I was so fired up about The Whale, I forgot to put it in my notes. But yes,
there you go. That's what I'm here for.
But we'll get to it now here. Best actor in a leading role. Who do we got?
We have Brendan Fraser, mm-hmm. The Whale, Austin Butler, and mm-hmm. Elvis, Colin Farrell in The Banshees of Inisherin, Paul Mescal in Aftersun, and Bill Nighy in Living.
If it doesn't go to Brendan Fraser, I'll riot. I'm already rioting because it didn't get nominated for Best Picture. And I swear, if Austin Butler wins...
I'm turning off the TV.
Like, I'm out. Like, he already won the Golden Globe, which I thought was...
It's the method acting. It's the fact that he's going to talk like Elvis for the rest of his life.
I just don't believe that his performance in that movie was Best Actor worthy.
I like to think of it as, like, could someone else have done that role better? Yeah, like I don't feel like Austin Butler himself, mm-mm. like aside from like anyone who's going to commit to a part like that and do method acting can do that. I mean, we've seen Christian Bale, Matthew McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club. Like we have seen people put themselves through hell to become the character they're playing. So like, I don't feel like Austin Butler brought anything novel other than the commitment to sounding like Elvis.
I mean, he played it up so much about staying in character and it staying with him for like 2 years and having to go to the hospital.
We get it.
But I feel like it was more the theatrics surrounding that movie that made it appealing. I don't really think it was him. So if he wins, I'm out. But the crazy thing is that all Best Actor nominees are all first-time nominees.
That's surprising that Colin Farrell. Has he been nominated before, like, in a supporting role?
First-time nominee.
Really?
I was even looking back at some of his movies, and for as a dynamic of an actor that he is... I don't think he really has that real defining role yet. And that, this one could be it. I wouldn't hate it if he won.
That's interesting because I feel like Colin Farrell is like a defined like A-lister in my head.
There are several actors like that that I feel like they are A-list. But even when you look at the movies they've been in, you're like, oh, there's not one that I really gravitate towards. Remember when we saw Gwyneth Paltrow at the grocery store?
Yes.
Like I know she back in the day won an Oscar. But looking at her movies, I still associate her with Pepper Potts. But I wouldn't really call that her... You know, her title role.
Okay, another to add to that, Claire Danes.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's also like won awards for a lot of the early stuff that she did, but then like was bigger on like Homeland. And then we just watched her in Fleischman is in Trouble. So there's some of those that, yeah, it's like, I forget what their like early defining role was.
Or I was thinking of like Anna Kendrick, who obviously well known for Pitch Perfect. I loved her in Up in the Air.
Twilight.
And she's an A-list. Yeah, but I still don't feel like she has that one role that like, oh yeah.
She forgot she was in Twilight. That's my favorite meme.
Yeah, I'm going with Brendan Fraser as the winner here. I will say, I think a snub here is Johnny Knoxville.
This is the stupidest take you have ever had on anything.
See, when it comes to best actor in a leading role, they always give it to somebody who really went above and beyond to get into character, put their body on the line. If anybody ever like drops a bunch of weight for a role like Joaquin Phoenix for Joker... That always gets recognized. That always feels to me like an easy win. Johnny Knoxville in his 50s, still putting his life on the line in Jackass Forever.
Yes. It's not a role. It's a bit.
He got hit by a bull again. Broken
ribs.
That's
his fault for being stupid.
Broken ribs. A concussion. Was in the hospital for months. A brain hemorrhage. That deserves a nomination in my eyes.
No, it doesn't.
I think it does.
That deserves to, I don't know, like, a Razzie for dumbest person?
No, I think that's best actor worthy.
But he's not playing a character. He's just being Johnny Knoxville, being stupid. That's not a character.
You could argue that the whole Johnny Knoxville persona is a character that he plays up. Not his real name.
Wait, it's not?
No.
What's his real name?
His real name is Philip John Clapp. Johnny Knoxville is a nickname.
Yeah, Johnny Knoxville sounds a lot more
It is a lot
But okay, cooler. No, I still don't think he deserves an Oscar. And also, I read this when I read your prep this morning, and I got to this, and I was like, this is truly the worst take you've ever had on anything.
The only kind of takes you can only find on Movie Mike's Movie Podcast. Johnny Knoxville deserves a Best Actor nomination. I also thought Ralph Fiennes in The Menu. He was really good in that.
So good. He's such a good actor. He is, mm-hmm. like... Hands down, I think, one of the best at playing just like villainous characters because he's Voldemort.
Yeah, he has a really great range and it shows so much in that movie. I'm surprised that didn't get a nomination. Some people said that Tom Cruise should have been nominated for Top Gun. No, look at his performance in that. It's so cheesy, so retro 80s, even though that character itself means a lot to so many people. That does not deserve an Oscar nomination, so get out of here with that. Moving on now to Best Actress in a Leading Role. What do we have here?
Cate Blanchett in Tar, Ana de Armas in Blonde, Andrea Riseborough in To Leslie, Michelle Williams in The Fabelmans, and Michelle Yao in Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Can't believe Ana de Armas was nominated. That is sus to me.
Seems sus.
I really love Michelle Williams in The Fabelmans. Like, she is such a great dramatic actress, and I felt like her performance in that movie, I mean, really carried it. The entire story kind of surrounded her character in that movie and what she went through and her emotional struggles. I would almost give it to her here, but Michelle Yao in Everything Everywhere All at Once was just such a great lead. And I think that role itself probably will be more defiant as the years go on. Like, that is just now an iconic movie character.
I feel like I need to rewatch that movie already.
Oh, we'll go rewatch it right now.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that one is going to win. All right, what do we have now? Best actor in a supporting role.
Brendan Gleeson in The Banshees of Inisherin, Brian Tyree Henry in Causeway, Judd Hirsch in The Fabelmans, Barry Keoghan in The Banshees of Inisherin, and then Kay Hui Kwan in Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I would really like him to win. I mean, he was a child actor known for the Indiana Jones movies, known for the Goonies, and then didn't really have success later. And the way he got this role was kind of his reprise and, you know, return to acting. And I think just for the sake of having a really good speech, and those moments kind of get me too at the Oscars, I would really want him to win. I think he deserves it over anybody else.
But to that point too, he did the speech at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, I want to see it again.
You want to see it again? Okay.
But I think the character and actor's performance that I really fell in love with was Brendan Gleeson. Like, he was so good in The Banshees of Inisherin, and I was never really a particular fan of his. And even when he did and hosted SNL, I was kind of like, eh, he's all right. But seeing him in this movie, it really made me like him.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to win.
I think so.
All right, who do we have now for actress in a supporting role?
Angela Bassett from Black Panther Wakanda Forever, Hong Chau from The Whale, Kerry Condon, Banshees of Inisherin, Jamie Lee Curtis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Stephanie Hsu, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I think both Jamie Lee Curtis and Stephanie Hsu almost cancel each other out in this category. I feel like their characters were a little bit equal in that. Jamie Lee Curtis has kind of a smaller role in that altogether, so I'm kind of surprised she got nominated. I don't think that's a supporting role worthy level performance. More so, I would go with Stephanie Hsu. But I think hands down, the one who should win is Angela Bassett in Black Panther.
Oh, absolutely. She deserves it.
Like, the emotion she put into her performance and her entire character arc in Black Panther was one of my favorite things in that movie.
I'm an Angela Bassett stan.
So she's great. And surprised that Hong Chau was nominated for The Whale and not Sadie Sink. I really love Sadie Sink in that movie.
I think Hong Chau's character had more depth because she was the one taking care of him, but also almost enabling his disease. So I feel like her character had this really hard, like, juxtaposition of wanting to care for her friend as a human and, like, take care of him and keep him alive, but also, like, not wanting to deprive him of things. Like, she would bring him fast food, but she was also, like, basically his nurse. So I just feel like her character had more depth and more layers than Sadie Sink's did, because Sadie Sink was not one-dimensional as a character, but his estranged daughter coming to get to know him.
I guess I was just more surprised with her performance and how vicious she was and how well she kind of played into that role of making you at times not like her, like almost to the point where you hated her character, and then kind of feeling redemption and sympathy towards her character. And for being an actor at her age to be able to pull that off, I thought that was really impressive.
I also think, though, this is just kind of like the start of us seeing Sadie Sink. Like,
yeah.
I think, like, she's been in some really good stuff lately. So I think there's potential there in the future. And also, I think, kind of like you said with Jamie Lee Curtis and Stephanie Hsu, if we had both Sadie Sink and Hong Chau, like, I don't think either of them would have a chance.
But still, out of anybody, I think Angela Bassett deserves it. So we'll go through Best Director now and then run through some of the rest of these. So who do we have for Best Director?
Todd Field for Tar, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert for Everything Everywhere All at Once, Martin McDonagh for The Banshees of Inisherin, Ruben Ostlund, Triangle of Sadness, and good old Steven Spielberg for The Fabelmans.
He won the Golden Globe, but out of all of the Steven Spielberg movies I've seen, I know a lot of this movie, like, the way it comes to life is because of his directing. And it is a story about himself done in a really kind of different way. It's not like a full-on biopic, so it really focuses on their family. But I just don't think it's his best director winner here. He's won it in the past, but I don't think it's here. Maybe that's what he's going for now, like in his older age, like I want to get another one. But I don't think he deserves it here. I think the most novel approach to directing and my new favorite team of directors are the Daniels and Everything Everywhere All at Once. I really love their movie before this, Swiss Army Man. I just think after the success of this movie, this is what more directors are going to try and emulate. They're going to basically steal their formula and not be able to replicate it. It kind of reminds me of Quentin Tarantino in the 90s. When he put out Pulp Fiction, everybody else kind of stole this genre. Everybody else wanted to be like him. I think that's what people are going to try to do now with the Daniels. They're going to try and create really outlandish, over the top original stories, and I don't think they'll be able to match them because they're already way steps ahead above everybody else. So I think they deserve to win. Their passion for directing really makes me excited just for everything they do in the future, and makes me excited that there will always be new novel movies coming out to root for, and that's always what I look for.
And if you can't tell, this podcast is not an ad for Everything Everywhere All at Once. It is just Mike D's favorite movie of the year.
It is. It has 11 nominations. I think it's going to clean house. So now we'll run through some of these other categories that are still noteworthy, but I don't really care about these as much. Animated feature film, I think, will go to Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. I thought it was a really great movie, but I was also coming off of just seeing the Disney Plus version of Pinocchio. So I think I was just tired of Pinocchio, which I hate that both of those movies came out in the same year. And Guillermo del Toro's approach to it was so much more thought out, and he'd been working on this movie for so long. I hate that I compared it to the other one because I just had that story just stuck in my head. I'm a little over the Pinocchio story. But take that aside and think of all the animation work that went into this, all the stop motion, the score to this movie. I think that one deserves to win. When it comes to cinematography, I think All Quiet on the Western Front will probably win for that. I'm surprised that movie got as many nominations as it did, but Netflix really didn't have anything else to kind of put in the running here. The only other one I could see winning would probably be Elvis, just because that movie had that Baz Luhrmann like glow to it, that very flashy cinematography.
Baz loves a flash.
It's so flashy. So I think that cinematography added a lot to that movie, but I'll still go with All Quiet on the Western Front. In a music category, original song, I'm going with the Rihanna song, Lift Me Up from Black Panther.
Easily. Rihanna's singing at the Super Bowl, and then a month later, she's getting an Oscar. It's going to happen.
And that's the only song out of all the other ones nominated that I associate with the movie.
Although that Natu Natu won the Golden Globe.
That's probably the one that would beat it out. I just feel now that songs don't have as much of an impact in movies as they used to. Like back in the 90s, 2000s, I feel like there was always like that title track to a movie that you would always associate with it. I feel like that's becoming less and less of a thing. Like big artists do put out songs like this for movies. I mean, you have Lady Gaga nominated for Top Gun Maverick. So it still happens, but I feel like they don't have that much of an impact of me connecting it to that movie. Lift Me Up did. I think the only one before this was probably Sunflower in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, but that's also because it's Post Malone. So I'm going with Rihanna here, but yes, you're right. Natu Natu probably could win easily. And then an original score, I will go with The Fabelmans. I think Steven Spielberg always makes great scores, and they always are very intentional and give the entire movie its feel, whether you realize it or not while you're watching it. And I felt that in The Fabelmans. And then in costume design, I always like when they do this category because it's people who are so passionate about what they do and they rarely get recognized. I know some people are like, why are they putting all these categories on TV?
Oh, I think this is one of the most important because I feel like, again, talking about, I love the fashion of the Oscars, like good costumes can make or break a movie.
A lot goes into it.
It's very intentional too in a lot of movies. Like think about like any like period piece you have, like those are going to be more like muted tones. Like Little Women comes to mind, or like Elvis, flashy, big costumes, like replicated so much of what Elvis wore. Like that is a craft.
And I love seeing the people go up there to take home the award because they deserve some recognition.
Oh, absolutely.
So like you said, with Elvis, I think that was a big part of it in that movie, all the flashy jumpsuits, even Colonel Tom Parker's costume added a lot to the entire movie. So I think that one will win. Although I would like to see Black Panther take home that one. Like, those costumes are amazing.
It's true.
And the just the advancements they made into the Black Panther suit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would pick, like, I personally would vote for Black Panther. But mm-hmm. I feel like if Elvis is going to win something.
Yeah, I'd rather them win costume design than Austin Butler. And then finally, for makeup and hairstyling, again, I probably think Elvis will win here.
I do think there, because, I mean, they did
get
those. And especially, like, Priscilla's hair. Like, they got that stuff down.
And especially because Austin Butler doesn't really resemble Elvis a whole lot. I felt like through some of the makeup and the hair, that kind of was able to create and paint that image more. So I think that was important more so than all the other movies nominated here. Although The Whale, a lot of that did involve a lot of makeup and the hair design.
Yeah, but that's also been done before.
And if I was personally voting, I would vote for the Batman just because I liked Robert Pattinson's look in that movie, how he was kind of like emo with the black makeup that's all smudged. His hair was all messed up and all over the place, and he had like really cool street style.
The makeup smudged in the hair, that's what people look like on Broadway on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, you're in Nashville. Yeah, they just took that approach. But yeah, like if I were to dress like one character from a movie nominated, I would dress like Robert Pattinson's Batman.
You already wear all black.
Exactly.
It works.
But anyway, there you have it. We ran through all the nominees. The Oscars are going down on Sunday, March 12th on ABC. I will be watching all 3 hours and we'll see who wins.
And you'll be wearing your Oscar black tux hoodie.
Yeah, my annual tux hoodie. We'll come back. I will give you my spoiler-free review of a Best Picture nominee, The Banshees of Inisherin, and then we'll talk about Scream 6.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Let's get into a spoiler-free movie review now. I want to talk about a Best Picture nominee, The Banshees of Inisherin. One of the most peculiar films I've seen in the Best Picture category, and one that I don't think is for everybody. I think within the first 20 minutes of this movie, I looked over to my wife and she said, "What is this? What are we watching?" And it is a bit of a slow burn, and it's one of those movies where you expect there to be something else, and there's really not. And sometimes that upsets me or disappoints me. But when I realized this is all this movie was going to be about, I was all in and I ended up really enjoying it. And what the movie really is, it's about Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, who are friends. And the entire movie is about them not being friends anymore. It's about a friendship unraveling. At the beginning, it feels like for no particular reason. But that's really it. It's just about a friendship unraveling and all the crazy links that this one guy goes through just because he can't take no for an answer. So before I get into my full review of The Banshees of Inisherin, here is just a little bit of the trailer.
Colin, Sonny, Larry. Captain Jude, he used to be the best of friends.
We're still the best of friends.
No, you're not.
Who says we're not?
Sit somewhere else.
Now, if I've done something to you, just tell me what I've done to you.
Well, you didn't do anything to me.
I just don't like you no more.
You didn't like me yesterday.
So Colin Farrell plays a guy named Patrick. Brendan Gleeson plays a guy named Colm. Sorry if I butcher their names. After watching this movie, since it takes place in Ireland and they're both Irish actors, I've been trying to talk like Colin Farrell. So everything kind of comes out like this. I feel like I could go to the Banshees of Inisherin and blend in a little bit. So I've been doing that a lot. So forgive me if I mess up the pronunciations of their names. But they are friends, and it starts at the very beginning of their story of them not being friends anymore. One day, Brendan Gleeson is just like, yo, I don't want to hang out with you anymore. And Colin Farrell is kind of this dimwit guy who has trouble putting things together, and he doesn't get it. He doesn't want to lose his best friend, and he goes through all these links to get him back. He won't take no for an answer. He keeps bothering him, even with the crazy stipulation he puts towards Colin Farrell to tell him, never contact me again. It keeps going further and further. And once I realized that, it really helped me settle into this movie. And I understood that I was watching a comedy. And I've said recently that I feel like we're kind of out of the era of comedies. But maybe we're just out of the era of American comedies, because they handle this one so well and it was so interesting and so more thought out that I think this is what comedies need to evolve into. It doesn't have to be all these zany things, all these gags and pop culture reference jokes and quotable moments that we tend to associate with comedies. I think you kind of need to grow from that to make people laugh again and have more stories like this where it's more situational comedy and finding really peculiar characters doing really unusual things. And there's all these cast of characters throughout this small little remote island. It just felt like a really great ensemble cast, and it didn't really feel like it was trying so hard to be funny. Just the essence of it, I found hilarious anyway. So it's a very deadpan style of comedy, and I just really love the focus on finding a very remote island and telling a story there. And sometimes when I'm like driving across the country on a road trip, I'll see a very remote house and think, what is that person's story? They are nowhere near a grocery store or a gas station. Like, how do they survive? Sometimes you see these small little towns and you think there has to be a story in there. And I felt like this is what the Banshees of Inisherin was. It was taking this small little community and amplifying it. These otherwise unorthodox characters that no one else would tell their story. That is exactly what this movie does. So again, I don't think it's for everybody. And watching this movie a little bit closely, you can kind of tell why it's getting so many nominations. It's like right up there with what critics are going to like. And now, like I talked about earlier, I think it is a contender because of that. So I still have that feeling that it could win for Best Picture. I don't think it deserves to, but it does have that appeal of it being novel and also being a comedy. But there are no bells and whistles. It's really just a character study. Within the first 10 minutes of the movie, you're like, what is happening right now? And the other thing I really enjoyed about this film was the cinematography and the focus on the landscape of Ireland. They made this country out to look completely beautiful, which I'm sure it's beautiful all on its own, but they really focused on that and they really highlighted that. The island itself is kind of personified, being responsible for what's going on in all these people's lives, and the fact that only so few people live there kind of adds to that humor of the craziness that happens on this small little island. I just really loved how relentless Colin Farrell's character is, and it made me kind of appreciate him a little bit more as an actor. I've seen so many of his movies, but I never really would put him on my list of he's an actor that I have to see every single movie they've been in. But in the last 10 years, he's had quite a range of being able to do really big blockbusters and smaller indie movies. So in the last 10 years, this definitely makes the list of one of my favorite roles of his. And the range he has from doing a character like this to playing the Penguin in The Batman and also doing movies like After Yang and The Lobster, it definitely gives him a little bit more of a case for me. It definitely made me want to be a little bit more invested in him and pay attention to some of his roles, because he picked some really good ones. And I think he really kind of shined in this role because he is Irish. And I think that added to a lot of the humor in this movie, because it maybe came a little bit more natural to him, and also him and Brendan Gleeson's just real life friendship, that really translated on screen. I think that is a great friendship because it is so unusual. It, in a weird way, kind of reminded me of the dynamic in Superbad, to where they are friends, but they also kind of have a falling out. There's some built up tension there. So in some weird, bizarre way, I kind of had that feeling of this is like Superbad in Ireland, but without a party. So if you are looking for something to watch that's rather peculiar, if you're interested in seeing all the Best Picture nominees and you don't want to watch a drama, you want to watch a comedy, and I'll still use the term comedy a little bit loosely because it's not LOL, you're going to wet your pants watching this comedy. It's a very deadpan style, which is what I'm into. But if all that sounds good to you, you can watch it on HBO Max, and I would give Banshees of Inisherin 4 out of 5 fingers. You gotta watch to find out why it's fingers.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's time to head down to Movie Mike's Trailer Park.
Scream 6 is supposed to have a ghost face unlike any ghost face we've ever seen. It's supposed to step up the Scream franchise. And I often feel whenever somebody tells you you're about to watch something unlike anything you've ever seen before, you know what I'm expecting? I'm expecting exactly what they've always been giving us. And watching this trailer, I want to feel different. Actually, within the first 60 seconds of this, I was excited. I thought this trailer actually looked a little bit more sinister than its predecessor, Scream 5, which I felt really banked on nostalgia, bringing back Neve Campbell, bringing back David Arquette, but both of them are out in this movie. Neve Campbell actually isn't returning to Scream 6 because she hated the amount of money they offered her for Scream 6 after being a part of this franchise for so long. She was like, I'm out. But it looks like a lot of the newer cast are back for Scream 6, including Jenna Ortega. And before I get into all my thoughts, as you can hear, I'm pretty fired up about this one. And I'm not even the biggest Scream fan. I just really want this franchise to do well for some reason. I'm just really banking on horror right now. But before I get into my full thoughts on Scream 6, here is just a little bit of the new trailer.
This isn't like any other ghost face.
What is this place?
A shrine.
We've got to lure him in.
We execute him.
Hello.
Let's play a game.
You know you're like the 10th guy to try this, right? It never works out for the dipshit in the mask.
Maybe. But there's never been one like me, Gale. I'm something different.
That's why I'm gonna shoot you in the head.
So for me, the first 60 seconds of the trailer, I thought it did look a little bit more sinister. It had me more interested. But once it got to that part, the entire exchange between Ghostface and Gale, I felt like it was a lot of the same. I felt like Scream 5 kind of had a soap opera vibe to it. And I was looking a little bit more for the modern horror vibe. because I think there's just so much room for the classic slasher to really evolve into something a little bit more sophisticated, because Scream movies were so big in the 90s. It really changed the trajectory of horror in the 90s going into the 2000s. And I'm always just kind of fascinated with the fan base that surrounds Scream. When it comes to all the iconic horror killers, I still put Ghostface on that Mount Rushmore because the face is so recognizable. I've never really loved any of the characters or storylines from the original one or care to see them kind of play out the same way I would like the Halloween franchise. I'm more interested in seeing Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, continue out that character than I am anybody in the Scream movies. So the premise behind this movie is all of the survivors from the last round of killings, they leave Woodsboro and now are starting new in New York City. So I do like that aspect of getting out of that small town, all this weird history that's supposed to mean something, but really to us as viewers doesn't mean anything. Like, I don't care about the history of Woodsboro. I don't want to see the same thing play out over and over again. Put them in a big city. I think that's where Ghostface can really shine. One part I did really enjoy in this trailer that I thought was a cool visual effect, whenever they are on the subway in New York and all of these people are in different Halloween masks and there are different version of people wearing the Ghostface mask and they are trying to figure out who is the actual Ghostface killer. And then I do love the little touch on the new Ghostface. It has like this weathered, worn down look. I think they are taking a page from Halloween and how they aged Michael Myers masks as all the reboots happened. And I almost feel like that is what they need to give Ghostface an edge. Make him less like some dude who can just be taken down by a group of teenagers and give him a little bit more of that Michael Myers-y vibe, being able to revive himself, kind of like a zombie Ghostface is I think what we need. And I saw some people complaining about Ghostface having a gun in this trailer, not because of their views on guns, but because it kind of takes away from some of the creativity. And I would agree with that to an extent. I think if you gave Ghostface a gun in the first or even the second movie, it would really take away from the appeal of what a slasher is supposed to be. I think a lot of horror movies would just kind of flat out be nothing if the villain just had a gun, or even if they just shot him all the time. I think that is kind of an easy way out. That would just end the story in any situation. Oh, we shot him and it's all over. Like, end of story. It's a lot more visually appealing to see Ghostface kill somebody with a garage door than him just shooting and taking somebody out. But when it comes to a sixth installment in a franchise and trying to create this darker, edgier Ghostface, I kind of like him with a shotgun. I think the shotgun has a bit more of an edge than just a normal gun. And I'll even enjoy if they kind of play that up a little bit of him making a decision to use the gun, figuring out how to use it, and probably not keeping it throughout the entire movie, but in that little part when they are in that convenience store. I'm okay with Ghostface having a gun. I think the trope is getting a little bit tired of him calling people when they're home alone, showing up, and then doing the whole home invasion thing. We had that flashback in Scream 5, but I don't think we need to keep revisiting that over and over again in every movie, even though they already did it in the trailer. That does make me think, though, now in 2023, maybe it's because I'm an adult, but a Scream movie is almost scarier to me now than it was when I was a kid, because I think as an adult, my biggest fear is a home invasion. I don't really have a list of fears of like animals or deep water or heights or anything like that. But home invasion, I don't care who you are, that is something that's always going to scare you. And that is a main reason why I can't go watch horror movies with my wife, Kelsey, because anything that remotely deals with a home invasion, she is out. That's why she will not be watching Knock at the Cabin next week with me. So my biggest question going into Scream 6 is, can the entire movie capture that sinister vibe that it has within the first 60 seconds of this trailer? And how much can this franchise really change in a year? Scream 5 was last year. Is it possible to have that big of a tonal shift in 1 year to the next? I hope so. I think this movie has potential. I just hope it doesn't fizzle out within the first 30 minutes of it and the third act kind of fall apart like it did in Scream 5. But I do want to get the answer to my question. This movie comes out this year on March 10th. I will go. I will watch it. But as of right now, I won't be happy about it. My excitement meter on a 10 scale, I'm probably at about a 6, a little bit more excited than just like, I don't care at all. I think this trailer won me over just a little bit. Otherwise, I kind of would have been out after Scream 5. So I'm willing to give Ghostface at least one more chance. And I say that as I'll probably be lining up for Scream 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
And that was this week's edition of Movie Minds Trailer Park.
And that's going to do it for another episode here of the podcast. But before I go, I got to give my listener shout out of the week. All you have to do is tweet me on Instagram, tag me in your Instagram story with a screenshot or a picture of the display on your car listening to an episode of the podcast. But this week, I'm going over to my DMs and shouting out James, who sent me a DM and said, "Hey, great to hear the A through Z episode. Just started listening around the holidays. I'm excited for this year." Thank you, James, for discovering the podcast and anybody else listening to the podcast for the very first time. Welcome to the movie crew. My favorite part about doing this podcast is interacting with you on social media to see how you feel about different movies, what movie recommendations you took me up on, what movies you have different opinions on than I do, and also if you have a recommendation of a topic I need to cover or even somebody I should interview on the podcast. Always hit me up with those. After last week's episode, a lot of people said I should get Tom Hanks on the podcast. I would love to get Tom Hanks on the podcast. If anybody has a contact for him, hit me up. But it's a little difficult to get the most famous movie star in the entire country. So I'm going to send out some emails today, see if we can make that happen. But thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your week. And until next time, go out and watch good movies. And I will talk to you later.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.